Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts today, Susan Franzen, here with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hello, Paul. It's good to have you back.
Well, hello, Susan, and hello to everybody out there. It's a cold day today, but here we are in the warmth of the studio. Thanks for joining us, everyone, and I'm really happy to be back, especially today when Leanne Harder, Director of Special Projects in Story County, is here for her monthly report. Leanne, one of my favorite people, sitting right next to me. What a treat.
Well, thank you. Good morning. Well, I'm going to start with an announcement about some revised building hours. They go into effect January 1st of 2020, so right around the corner. The Board of Supervisors a couple weeks ago decided to modify building hours for the Justice Center and the Story County Administration Building. Both are located in Nevada. Currently, we're open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. But starting January 1st, which we're closed, ironically, on that day, so I guess effective January 2nd in actuality, the hours will be 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. So note that if you have business in either the administration building in Nevada or the Justice Center as well in Nevada, the hours will be 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. One of the reasons for the change is a lot of the state and federal agencies that various offices and departments in Story County deal with all close at 4:30 p.m. anyway. So if someone came in and they needed to talk to someone at the DOT and they're at the treasurer's office, that conversation won't occur anyway, because the DOT is closed. This does not affect office hours for the Story County Animal Shelter, the county engineer, and conservation. They all have different hours as well, and those hours are available on our website. You can contact me. I can tell you when they're open as well. But again, starting effective January 1st, 2020, but in reality, January 2nd, office hours will be, or building hours will be 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. So if you can help us spread that word, that would be great. Of course, anytime 24/7, you can see our services online, too, at our website at storycountyiowa.gov. Well, it's that time of year, and ironically, here in the booth, we have a button of Paris. People are starting to think about traveling for spring break or just in travel in general. And I just want to put a quick announcement out and a reminder that you can get your passports at the Story County Recorder's Office. You can get your applications there, file the passport application, get your picture taken. So just some things to keep in mind. Again, they're at the Administration Building in Nevada at 900 6th Street. So as for the Story County Recorder, and this is if you want to do your passport, they can take the photos for $15. Applicants 16 or older, age 16 or older, if you already have a passport, they have to have that or a certified birth certificate. Applicants under 16 must have that birth certificate. Just as we just, personal note, went in like four weeks ago, four of the five of us in my family. We already have our passports in hand. I wish I could say I'm traveling with that passport, but I'm not. But we're not taking any chances. We're just making sure. And it was so easy. Stacy and her staff have it down to a T. They get you in and out. There are fees associated, of course. So make sure you bring a checkbook or money order. But, you know, they'll get you in, get your application filed, take your pictures. And then in a few weeks, you get a nice surprise in the mail. So keep that in mind if you are thinking about traveling, and plan ahead, because it does take some time. Another quick announcement from the recorder's office. I've said this a couple times, so we're on that deadline now. They want to remind everyone that those ATV, ORM, ORV, so those off-road vehicles, and snowmobile registrations are due by December 31st. And especially if you have more than one of those, you want to get in so you don't incur that $5 penalty per vehicle. All snowmobiles operate on public land must display a separate user permit. You can get that at the recorder's office as well as several other vendors throughout Story County. If you have one of those vehicles, you probably got a general postcard reminder. But just keep in mind, that is next week. So if you have not gone in and visited them, you need to. Story County Veterans Affairs is putting a notice out there that January 2nd of 2020 will be Veterans Day of the Capitol. If you're interested in attending or for more information, contact Brett McLean, our Veterans Affairs Director, at 515-956-2626, or you can email him at bmclean@storycountyiowa.gov. The Treasurer's Office will continue the revised hours of operation next year. They started that this year on the second Tuesday of each month. They opened at 8, but then not to serve the public. They did some in-service and some staff training. Their office hours for the public will begin at 9:30 and go till 4:30. Otherwise, they're open every day from 8 to 4:30, starting January 1st, of course, since we modified that 5 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. So keep in mind, if you're visiting and you have business for the Treasurer's Office on the second Tuesday of each month, they won't be there. They'll be there, but not able to help you until 9:30. And then effective January 1st as well, floodplain management for unincorporated Story County transfers from the County Outreach and Special Projects Manager, who happens to be me and my position, to Story County Planning and Development. I served for years in the Planning and Development Department as the director, and when I moved up into the Board of Supervisors office in my current position, I brought those duties and responsibilities with me. The board adopted an ordinance and modified the regulations a few weeks ago, so those responsibilities will transfer back to Planning and Development. I'll be glad to answer any questions anyone has. But I will definitely send you on down to our Planning and Development Director, Jerry Moore, and he may be reached at 515-382-7246. I'm still going to be in floodplain management, but on the outreach side of things, not the day-to-day implementation and regulation. I am encouraging everyone to watch for our annual report coming out in January. It will be published, actually, January 8th in the Sun. Copies will also be available at city halls and libraries, posted online, and then again, as I said, distributed to households throughout Story County in the Sun on January 8th. It'll be a snapshot of what 2019 looked like at Story County, and it has a wealth of information, so take time to read that. Visit our website if you need anything further from that, and holiday closings quickly. We are closed next week on Tuesday, December 24th. And Wednesday, December 25th. Then the following week, county offices close 2 hours early at 3 p.m. on December 31st, and then all day on Wednesday, January 1st. If you want to reach us and sign up for Notify Me, you can go to our website at www.storycountyiowa.gov and check us out on social media to find out our happenings. We have Facebook and Twitter. Facebook is at Story County, Iowa, as is Twitter. And Instagram is story_county85. So a little bit of different identity there. Also, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Story County, Iowa. The monthly meetings of the Story County Board of Supervisors are posted a couple days after the meeting, generally. But you can go back and watch what happened that Tuesday morning. And then feel free to contact me with any questions at lharter@storycountyiowa.gov. My phone number is 515-382-7247. Don't call that this morning, though, because my phone is not working.
Oh,
we're still fixing that. So email me if you have any questions from anything I said this morning. Again, our website is www.storycountyiowa.gov. And that is my monthly report for December.
When you were talking about the passport, that triggered something in my mind because it's about time for me to renew my driver's license. And we all know that when you renew your driver's license now, it's a good idea to qualify for the identity, the star on your license. And I've got to do that because you have to have that to fly.
Yep.
And now the documentation to do that, I know one is a passport. And I wondered to what extent the auditor's office can help you assemble documentation for those things.
I don't know. I will follow up with Stacy and get back to you and see if they have information available.
I want to be able to fly to Georgia in March, and they'd reject me if I don't get that star on my license. So it's a good reminder to everybody to when you do renew your license, be sure and have the documentation necessary to have that star emblazoned on your license so that you can fly after a certain date. It's probably October next year.
I think it is October 2020, and I have recent experience with that. If you are a female that has been married and changed your name from what your birth certificate says, that does occur in a majority of instances, you sometimes need to bring your marriage license, especially if your Social Security card does not match as well.
I'm glad I mentioned that because people don't know that. And we really, that is a real sea change to get this documentation for your license. It's above and beyond the normal things you bring when you renew your license.
I've been in line with a number of women that have shared the same situation I have. You know, I got there and I had maintained my maiden name in some aspects, and then I had changed my name in other aspects, and my documents didn't all match up to who I am. And so I needed to have some modifications and proof that I did have the name Harder with me. So.
Well, Leanne Harder, this is the last report for the year.
This is the last report for the year. And I will point out, I'm sorry, I will not be joining you in January. Linda Merkin will be here, Supervisor Linda Merkin. But I will see you in February.
I'm depending on it because without you, it's not a new month.
Oh, there you go. Well, Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year to Leanne Harder. Thank you. From Story County, Leanne Harder.
Well, in case you just tuned in, you are listening to Local Talk with hosts Paul Wearson and Susan Franzen. Paul's been talking with Leanne Harder, Special Projects Manager for Story County, with her monthly report. Our next guest is Sunny Camp, Executive Director of Story County Community Foundation, and we are pleased that she has graciously agreed to introduce us to the many grant recipients here on Local Talk. It gives us a window into how our community takes care of itself in Story County, and she'll be in with her guest right after the break. That was a lively introduction to our next guests, Sunny Camp, Executive Director of Story County Community Foundation, speaking with Eric Danielson about the SCCF grant awarded to Iowa College Access Network, ICANN. And actually, Sunny is going to be the introducer and the questioner and tell us something about both Story County Foundation and about ICANN.
Sure. Well, I'm glad to be back. Thank you again for having me. I am Sunny Camp. I'm the executive director with the Story County Community Foundation. We are a community foundation here that serves Story County residents and all of our communities. And from a broad perspective, our mission and vision is to focus on connecting our communities through philanthropy and charitable giving from an individual and family perspective, but also from a nonprofit organizational perspective. One of the things that we do is we provide grants to nonprofit organizations that are in Story County or that serve Story County residents every year. And I'm excited to have Eric Danielson with me here this morning with the Iowa College Access Network. And Eric, if you want to just start by telling us more about the organization's mission and some of the programs that you have to offer serving the state of Iowa.
Sounds great. Well, thank you for allowing me to be here today. I appreciate it. ICANN has been around since September of 98, and I've been lucky enough to be with them since its inception in there. And we do really blanket the state of Iowa, helping students and families going through the college planning, financial aid, and really stressing about life after high school. A lot of the programs that we provide, or I would say what we're best known for, is helping people through the financial aid process. But we have career and college planning programs where we help families through the steps of looking at, again, life after high school, which can be many different options. No one option is going to serve for every student. So that can be college for many students, but it could be apprenticeships or other things. But we are trying to encourage students at looking at options after high school, getting some education, whatever that might be for them. Again, because no one path is going to be the same for every student.
Wonderful. And are there any specific communities that you serve more in Story County, or would you say that you serve Story County from a broader perspective?
I would say we serve them from a broader perspective, and a lot of ways that we get into the communities is through the high schools. So in one way or the other, we're in within the different high schools doing presentations, sometimes during the day for just the students, but a lot of times it's at night for the students and parents going over the financial aid process or the career and college planning process as well. With the help of this grant that we've received, we've also been able to come back and trying to hold some more what we call fill out the FAFSA events, where we're actually helping students and families fill out that financial aid form that is a barrier for a lot of families in trying to get completed and get their education paid for.
Well, that form, I know, thinking back to my time transitioning from high school to college, can be very daunting and a lot to process and a lot to figure out. So it's great that we've got this wonderful resource to connect with in our communities. Can you talk a little bit more about any work that you might do to partner with nonprofit organizations who serve either youth or individuals that are in transition to from that high school phase to some sort of path of continuing education? Does ICANN do any sort of collaborative work or offer any or sort of educational sessions? I know you just talked a little bit more about the high school element, but are there organizations that you work with, or is that something that you would potentially consider doing down the road?
Oh, it certainly would be something we'd consider down the road. I mean, I think our main avenue is going through the high schools, and not that we wouldn't help anyone that is looking at going back to try to further their education on and helping them through the process. But a big way that we've been able to get into, like I said, throughout the state, whole state of Iowa, and as well as specifically Story County, has been through the high schools and offering the presentations. I will tell you that coming up here with the help of this grant, we're able to offer a couple of fill out the form events that we just put on the books that are going to be at the DMAC Hunziker Center. We're going to broadcast this. Hopefully I wanted to mention it today, but also again, going through the high school channels and trying to get the information out to where anyone that needs help in filling out the FAFSA form in Story County, I'm going to have a representative there be there on Wednesday, January 29th. And Wednesday, February 26th from 2 to 8 p.m. where they can set up appointments with us to go over to fill out the forms and to get it done. And that's just one example of being able to do. We've already been in with this within a couple of high schools already as well in doing it. So what I want to say is we would take a look at anything and trying to partner with that. This is just, I guess, just one way in being able to do it, but certainly would be open and willing to talk with anyone in doing it. In fact, just had conversations collaboration with the Story County LCAN representative as well. And we're talking about different things and getting information out too. That was just last week, you know, had a meeting there. So absolutely open to anything that we can in trying to help the residents and students and families here in Story County.
So these two events that you have coming up over at the DMAC Hunsaker Building are open to the community?
Yes, it is.
Great,
yes, it is.
Great.
I mean, a major way that we're going to try to promote that again is through the counselors and seniors that still need help in filling it out. But it's not just limited to that. If there's anyone that would need help in filling out the forms, those two nights are specifically geared for trying to get those forms filled out for any families that still need to get it done.
Great. And what can you remind me again, excuse me, this morning, what is the time frame of those two events?
Again, Wednesday, January 29th from 2 to 8 p.m. and then Wednesday, February 26th from 2 to 8 p.m.
Now.
Those are the two that we have down right now. And there's a way of being able to on our website to sign up for appointments there.
A specific time.
Okay. Yep.
Okay. Wonderful. Can you share a little bit more, provide some insight about how I can offer services supporting that transition from high school to whatever path of continuing education is a good fit for the students that you serve? One, do you primarily work with seniors in high school or seniors or individuals in that age range and their families? And two, are you seeing more of a trend with college readiness, whether it's a four-year academic institution, a two-year institution, or more commonly or more of an interest in apprenticeship programs? I only ask because in my recent career before coming to the Community Foundation, previous role, I had learned quite a bit more about the apprenticeship program, and that wasn't something when I was in high school that I was even familiar with. Not that I would have taken that path, maybe I would have, but it just wasn't something that was on my radar as a high school senior.
Yeah, really, let me address that at first. Really, within the last 2 or 3 years, we've gotten more into trying to make sure to emphasize that that is a career path that some students it would be the perfect fit for. I think, you know, over the last, you know, even since I've been around over 20 years, I think there was an emphasis at one time and, you know, going on to four-year school, it needs to be four-year school. And really that is going away. For some students, the right career path for them will involve 4 years of college. For others, their career path is going to be more, others less. But again, there's no one right path, and we need to emphasize and let these students who would be more better suited and a better fit for them in getting into apprenticeship programs, because we need workers in these areas.
Mm-hmm.
We need plumbers, electricians.
Yep.
I mean, you name it. There is a big demand right now throughout this whole state. I want to say country as well, you know, taking a look at it. So the emphasis has definitely been there more to where we've been working with some of the trade unions and that in providing more information in our materials and our website. In fact, we may even be looking at developing a guide in itself in just looking at the trades and apprenticeship programs in being out there. So definitely seeing more of an interest in that area and making sure that students know that that is the path for them. Now, I was like you. I tell people during the presentations, you would not want me working on your plumbing or being an electrician. It would not have been the right path for me by any means. Was not right fit. But, I mean, I've got other friends and you know, knowing some of the kids and stuff nowadays they work with, that is what they enjoy. They don't want to be in a classroom. They want to be working with their hands.
Yep.
And doing things. They're better at that, and we need them as workers out there right now for – you know, we need them in the workforce at the right now. So letting them know about those different options that are out there is definitely something, again, more into our mission now of not just, even though we're ICANN, Iowa College Access Network, it's really when we're talking about college, it's education beyond high school.
Yep. 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 And you primarily serve seniors and their families, or do you work with juniors and seniors?
Oh, I would tell you what, it's really both. I mean, we would go down to even a freshman year.
Okay.
We even have a freshman transition program for the end of the eighth grade year, beginning of freshman year, and trying to get them off on the right foot, just to let them know about some of these different options that we can talk about, but also really freshman year is when they begin with their GPA and taking classes and going on.
And they're really thinking about that trajectory and what's next and
absolutely
looking down the road and how they can be proactive.
Yeah, just to get them thinking about it. Even though it might seem like far away, we want to at least plant that seed in their mind that's something that they should be thinking about. And what they do in their classes and things during freshman year is just as important as senior year, because they're starting that overall GPA and what classes that they're taking. So we really work with students, you could even say from eighth grade through senior year, and then a lot of college, you know, students as well, especially with the financial aid form, since they've got to fill it out each year. We work with them. So kind of a wide range.
So similar to their career resume, you're helping them set a platform for their academic resume as they're moving forward and planning ahead and thinking about all those things that are important for professional readiness and professional preparedness and things like that through their the next phase in high school, but then even more importantly, as they're looking ahead.
Yep, absolutely. We've kind of had a saying, college ready kind of equals career ready in a lot of areas, and so trying to stress those points to them.
Great. Well, the Story County Community Foundation is proud to have provided ICANN a community grant for the project. Can you talk more specifically about that? How our grant dollars, are being directly applied to the specific programs that you'll be providing here in Story County? I know you've talked a little bit more. You talked a little bit about that already, but can you just provide a little more insight on what you'll be doing with those dollars and how you'll be reaching high school students and their families here in our communities?
Really, what it allows us to do is being able to go multiple times to the different schools and being able to provide these events. The career and college planning and financial aid programs are one of the things, but also allowing us to be able to go to come back and doing fill out the form events and FAFSA events as well, making sure that we're trying to get them going down the right path, having making the best informed decision that they can for the choice that they're doing within high school. So it allows us to go to, you know, Ames, Nevada, Collins Maxwell, Colonesco, Roland Story, Ballard High School, Gilbert High School, all those high schools to be able to provide these programs. And I can't say that all programs that we offer are at all these high schools, but they're all available now for them to be able to do. And one way or the other, we're in these schools doing multiple events, and it just allows us as a nonprofit organization to be able to continue to offer that service. And again, to come back, just like I said, with the events at the Hunziker Center that we're going to be holding on as well, so we can serve the Story County students and families, you know, closer to their area. Besides looking at our office, where we have one down at the DMAC Ankeny campus, we can come into the community and be able to provide those services.
Are there any sort of fees or, do you charge anything to the individuals or families that utilize your services or sign up for your classes?
No,
okay,
no.
Great.
We're going those at no cost to the students and families.
That's wonderful. So when I was in high school, I was not familiar with this organization, and I know talking to you before we jumped on the air, the organization's been around for quite some time. So what are the best ways for listeners to connect with you and to learn more about what you're doing beyond their time with you this morning on the radio?
We have a website, icansucceed.org, where they can go and learn more about our services. If any student or family would like to sign up for an appointment with us, they can do that over the different various areas that we can get into depending on where they're at, college planning, the financial aid process, just even after people fill out the FAFSA form and they get award letters back and want to go over the specifics of that, we can work with them through line by line what the award letter means and give them an idea on how much the college is going to cost and an idea on what the borrowing is going to be, but trying to limit that borrowing as well. So even after filling out the form, we can help them with that. But I would say they're going to our website or giving us a call at 877-272-4692 as well.
So again, that's 877-272-4692?
Yes, that is correct.
The website is icansucceed.org.
Icansucceed.org.
Okay. I think it's great that you provide those services even after the acceptance letter with FAFSA to really break down what that award letter looks like and put it into perspective how much a student or the prospective student would really need from an academic perspective versus potentially incurring much more debt than they would possibly need down the road. While philanthropy can be explained in many different ways, Eric, at the Story County Community Foundation, we often explain it as giving one's time, talents, or treasures to their communities. What is one thing that listeners can do to support ICANN through their time, talents, or treasures?
I would say that anybody that would have a passion in helping in students and families through this, I would encourage them to do that. I mean, first of all, and I think this would help just all of us building a stronger economy, a stronger, you know, workforce and everything. If we as adults took more time with our own children or other children, grandchildren, whatever it is, and talking about their career aspirations and then kind of giving them some advice or just, you know, talking through them about the process on what they want to do and maybe the adults sharing with them on their experiences that they had within their careers as well. Again, it's just kind of giving more information to these students as they're going through high school to try to make the most informed decision that we can for them. So just sharing their experiences and talking with them and having conversations. Again, that might be parents with their children, but it could be in any adults, aunt, uncles, friends, families,
school counselors, teachers, mentors, yes.
Absolutely. Just having those conversations, you know, because the whole reason why we're trying to educate people is for, you know, life after high school and having a career or getting into it. And if we can get people into areas that match their likes and areas that are going to have good jobs.
Skill sets and personal interests, yes.
Yep. But in areas that are going to lead to jobs as well, that will lead to the stronger economy, a stronger workforce that we'll have, which is going to benefit, you know, everyone, Story County, the state, statewide in general. And again, no path is going to be the same for each student. So, and I might be able to start a conversation with someone who has no interest in what career area that I went to, but there still could be things that we learn from that.
And it brings about a different perspective.
Yeah,
yes,
how we come to those decisions, yes, on what career path that led us, how we got here.
So, again, really just fostering a mindset of having those conversations early on and continuing those conversations about their potential students, skill sets, interests, passions, where they might look ahead, and even just considering their options down the road, outside of just the mindset of going to college and kind of doing what is the status quo to some people, but really just, again, broadening their awareness and having those continued thoughtful conversations.
Right. And I would also like to mention, we do have a lot of what we call Fast for Ready Iowa events throughout the state of Iowa. Not all the events ICANN reps are at. There are other volunteers in that are there. And on our website at icannsucceed.org/FastForReadyIA, there are still events that are going to go on through March that people could volunteer for in helping students and families in filling out the financial aid form if they're comfortable. Just one way to be able to volunteer some time and to do. And we have many of those events that'll be happening, you know, again next year in October, November as well, during the heavy financial aid season.
Well, thank you for sharing, and thank you for joining us today. And most importantly, thank you for the work that you're doing to support high school students and their families and really foster that mindset to broaden their awareness of the options that they have as they're looking ahead to their futures.
Oh, well, thank you very much. We appreciate the foundation for giving us the grant to be able to do this. I mean, it helps as a nonprofit organization immensely, so I was very excited when we got the letter stating that we were getting it, and appreciate the time today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you, both of you. Sunny Camp, Executive Director of Story County Community Foundation, speaking with Eric Danielson about the SCCF grant awarded to Iowa College Access Network, ICANN. After the break, we'll come back with a lively report on the Farmers Union Convention held in Grinnell on Friday, December 6th, with Aaron Lehman, President of the Iowa Farmers Union, and then 5 minutes from one of the six candidates who spoke. So stay tuned to find out which candidate had the most forceful insights on farm policy. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames.
On Friday, December 6th, the Iowa Farmers Union held its annual convention in Grinnell, and since this is a presidential caucus year, they invited candidates with interest in agricultural issues to speak. Even with a mayor's forum in Waterloo earlier in the day, there were six candidates who came to Grinnell: Amy Klobuchar, John Delaney, Tom Steyer, Cory Booker, Barry Sanders, and Pete Buttigieg. Susan was there to record them, and she expects to condense their highlights into a Heart of Iowa program in a few weeks, but she felt that listeners with concerns about national farm policy would be interested in a report from the convention participants. Now, Susan, why don't you tell our listeners what to expect?
Thanks, Paul, and I'm glad you, as someone who's lived in Story County among Story County farmers all of your life, are on hand to host the discussion. We'll start with Aaron Lehman, president of the Iowa Farmers Union, telling us what he hoped the convention would accomplish and whether he thought it succeeded. Then I have a five-minute clip of what I thought was the most powerful description of the problems small farm families are facing. I'll let you guess which candidate you'll be hearing from. But probably the most important part of the meeting and the hardest to cover for radio are the conversations among the delegates. For that, we have Cornelia Flora, who many of you may have heard before. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Here's the advantage of being old. You get lots of titles. I'm the Charles F. Curtis Distinguished Professor of Agriculture and Life Sciences and Sociology Emerita.
And you have also worked throughout the world.
Yes, I've done international work in agricultural and rural development in Africa, Asia, and Latin America.
Is Aaron Lehman on the phone now? Okay.
Yes, this is Aaron.
What did you hope to accomplish with this convention?
Sure. It's our annual statewide convention, and it sets the agenda for the organization for the coming year as we adopt policy that serves as our guidebook for our advocacy efforts throughout the year. And it was especially important this year because so many of our farmers are really going through very difficult times. Farmers are tightening their belts, just trying to make ends meet. And so the policy discussions are extremely important to help us address those issues farmers are facing every single day.
Paul?
Well, I spent most of my life in Des Moines, but I've always been in touch with my family farm, and guess what? I moved there when I retired, so I am now living among farmers and very in touch with what's going on, and I think that all of this is very timely. Number one, the problem with commodity prices, the trade wars, the margins that have always existed on the farm that are very difficult sometimes and challenging, so it's really timely to interrogate and talk with candidates who are wanting to be president about farm problems and the things that are facing the farmers. So
you were commenting on the uses of farmland around your farm. For example, people aren't using cover crops. Why not?
And yeah, I think the main thing is that we all are hearing about conservation projects and promises and policies that really help conserve soil. Now, when I was a boy on the farm, we did fall plowing, and of course we had four bottom plows, and we went, oh man, 8-9 inches deep, and of course the soil would turn, and I remember the shine off the soil. You don't see that anymore. But there's new methods of tillage that doesn't disturb the dirt so deeply, but it still releases a lot of carbon, and you still see soil erosion on the snow in the ditches. And I see that practice pretty much all around me. Like, for instance, I don't see a lot of no-till going on.
This is what is so interesting, that no-till has been around since the 1970s, and yet only in the nation as a whole, only 11% of the farms practice it.
I promised to let people know which candidate I thought summed up the problems the most effectively. So let's listen to him.
Thank you, Iowa Farmers Union, for all that you are doing in tackling one of the great crises facing this country, a crisis that we don't talk enough about. And it's not only the decline of family-based agriculture in America, it is the decline of rural America. I live in one of the most rural states in this country. I used to be the mayor of our big city, 40,000 people. That was it, biggest city in the state. Most of our people live in towns of 1,000 or less, 2,000 or less. I believe in the rural way of life. It is a good way of life. It is a good place to raise our children. And we together have got to do everything that we can to rebuild rural America, because what's going on now is just not acceptable. And when we talk about the decline of rural America, we are talking about the decline of family farms, and I don't have to tell you, it's true in Vermont, it's one of the saddest things that goes on in my state, it's going on in your state. People whose families have owned farms generation after generation, sometimes going back to the Revolutionary War, are now being forced off of the land because the prices that they are getting for their commodities are nowhere near the cost of production. So, let me tell you this. Let me make a promise. See, I try not to make too many promises on the campaign trail, but here is one promise I make to you. My Secretary of Agriculture will come from the ranks of family-based agriculture, not from corporate business. And that secretary and our entire administration will be dedicated to rebuilding rural America and bringing young people into family-based agriculture and making sure the family farmers get the prices they need in order to live a good life. In my view, we can no longer tolerate farm bankruptcies in the Midwest being at their highest level in a decade, while the CEO who controls Smithfield Foods got a $291 million compensation package in 2017. Agribusiness prospers, family farmers get driven off of the land, and in some cases, farmers are doing terrible things because of the agony that they are going through. We can no longer tolerate the top 10% of farms in this country, the biggest farms, receiving 77% of all government subsidies. We're going to turn that around. We're going to use federal resources to protect family farms, not agribusiness or factory farms. We cannot allow, continue to allow, just four large companies to control 82% of the beef packing industry, 85% of soybean processing, 63% of pork packing, and 53% of chicken processing. We're going to have an attorney general in this country who understands antitrust law. Too many rural communities, there is only one buyer of crops. You know that better than I. Which means food producers are at their mercy. They must use one corporation's feed and livestock. They must accept one corporation's costs, and they must accept one corporation's lower and lower payment rates. Today, and again, you know this better than I do because you're living with this reality, for every dollar Americans spend on food, farmers earn less than 15 cents. Which is the smallest share in the modern history of our nation. And I can tell you, as a former mayor and a congressman and a senator, that the American people appreciate the hard work that family farmers do. They want family farmers to earn living incomes, not 15 cents. On the dollar that consumers spend. And we're going to change that ratio around. We need a Secretary of Agriculture who understands that we need more family farms, not more factory farms in the United States.
As you could tell, that was Bernie Sanders. So now I think it's time to get back to Aaron Lehman. Aaron, you're still with us?
I am, yes.
Great. And you said the convention was intended to set your advocacy for the coming year. How did the candidates and the workshops at that convention help you with that goal?
Well, the feedback we got from our folks who were at convention was very, very positive. For one, the candidate forum, which featured Senator Klobuchar and Representative Delaney and Tom Steyer and Senator Booker and Mayor Buttigieg, in addition to Senator Sanders, they did an excellent job of connecting with the farmers in the room. And to have the opportunity to talk farm policy, dedicated farm policy discussion with this number of candidates was something that our members really appreciated. And they felt that the candidates not only made a priority of talking about farm policy with our folks, but also in connecting with the farmers where they were at. So we got very good feedback from that. We'd had a lot of different workshops, one specifically dealing with farm stress and the conditions on the farm and how farmers are dealing with them. We got a lot of positive feedback from our folks about that as well. Trying to really address how the stress the farmers are feeling because of low commodity prices and very challenging economic conditions. But we also talked about climate change. We talked about water issues. We talked about food safety issues and our local food system and how it can connect with consumers in an even better way. So those were just a number of the things that we talked about, and we know that the challenges we're facing are really intense, certainly dealing with trade and ethanol as well. But we felt most people left the convention feeling reinvigorated, and that innovation that comes out of working together through these meetings is something that I think a lot of our farmers took away from the convention.
And Cornelia Flora, what were your impressions? You were at the conference also.
I thought it was pretty amazing, and they always have really good conferences, but this one was very special. Two things, I think, struck me. The stress on the farm portion of the conference was very moving, because farmers would get up and say, I had this problem, or my neighbor had this problem and I didn't know and he killed himself. Or they would say, my son was feeling really stressed, he was acting really strange, and I can't get mental health here. So the notion, what the policy that became very clear is that we in Iowa, something we can deal with, have to make sure there is mental health available and help available. They also said, and we need, when we see our neighbors and our friends withdrawing, we need to talk to them and help them talk and tell them it's okay, because this is a lot of help that's needed. The other thing was this section on climate change. And this was interesting because of the people who stood up and talked in mental health and climate change, some of them were close to tears and did cry because they felt this so deeply. And the concerns about climate change certainly are very, very strong among farmers. There's too much rain or no rain. You get totally flooded out or there's no water when you need it. And then the late rains and cold meant that farmers were harvesting into the night. As we drove home, we saw this with their headlights on their tractors on these very wet fields, which then compact the soil, which will reduce their yields for at least several years. So we see the climate change forcing farmers to act in ways they know aren't ideal for their land or their crops or their mental health, but doing it because that's what they do.
Yeah, the thing is about climate change, there's not really there's really a lot of people who, especially in government now, who deny that this is happening, refuse to incorporate policies to deal with climate change. And what really disturbs me out there is that a lot of people who aren't scientists are telling scientists they're wrong. And this is almost a popular view among some segments of our society, which prevents policy changes and things that can be done to alleviate some of these problems. It's kind of disturbing, isn't it?
Well, it is. What is very interesting around climate change is no one will believe the scientists who say it's happening and it's real and this is what's causing it. But everyone is counting on science to somehow invent a way to pull all the carbon out of the air and stop climate change. So we don't like scientists who tell us what is happening and why. But we do like scientists to solve the problems for what is happening without going really to the causes.
And then there are a lot of policy issues. You know, I grew up in an era when you could raise a family on a 160-acre farm. And now farmers up in my area, there are many men farming 4,000 acres, you know, which are incorporating several family farms besides their own family farm. And that's agriculture on a different scale, which has really altered also Main Street and small town life in Iowa.
Well, we have had a very strange policy, and this is Democrats and Republicans, which is production for export. We grow basically four crops because of subsidies. We grow corn and beans, but elsewhere they grow wheat and cotton, and that's about it. And when I've asked farmers, why do you grow this, they say, well, that's all we can grow. And I said, what? Iowa is a wonderful place to grow lots of things. And they said, no, that's all the government pays us for. So we've had these policies that have reinforced growing only a few things, and it has had a real impact on our soil and our farmers and our vulnerability to both climate change and price volatility, which is what we're seeing now.
We're talking about a monoculture, aren't we?
We're talking serious monoculture, which does bad things to the soil, bad things to communities, and particularly the three of those four crops that I mentioned are row crops, which leaves a lot of soil exposed to wind and water erosion.
Well, this is sounds like the beginning of a long conversation on things that we could do differently to solve some of these problems, or at least address some of these problems. So I hope we'll be hearing from all of you in the future, Aaron. We haven't even talked to you about the priorities for policy that came out of this, so we'll probably be back with you again.
Well, very much. It was a very helpful discussion.
Thank you all for being here. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Susan Franzen and Paul Wearson. Other voices you heard were Leanne Harder, Sunny Camp, Eric Danielson, Aaron Lehman, Bernie Sanders, Cornelia Flora.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon at 7 p.m., and you can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website. KHOIFM.org is the website, and there you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories.
Local Talk was engineered by Paul Hertz. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Ragamuffin, played by Nora Hulse from Kate Walks, Two-Step Rags by women composers from 1899 to 1920, and Christmas music by Mannheim Steamroller.
Now, Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878, or contact us through our website, khoyfm.org. That's also where you need to go to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership. Just look for the yellow donate button today.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again on the radio.